This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, of course, over the next hour, they're going to be those of Dr. Joe Douglas, and Joseph Douglas, has certainly worked with intelligence for many years, and since he's retired, he's actually written a number of books. One of them was Red Cocaine. It goes into the background of the communist involvement in the international drug smuggling. He recognizes, of course, the CIA involvement in that, but most people don't understand how, in many respects, the communists and the CIA have always worked together. His later book, of course, Betrayed, going into the background of the men who were abandoned in Vietnam. We never talk about that. We never talk about the part that Senator McCain played of actually squelching any effort to bring out the truth about the men we left behind. But now, of course, Dr. Douglas has written another book going into mind control, and I think it's so important that the American people understand the mind control techniques that have been developed by the communists, but I believe that these same techniques are actually, in many respects, being used on the American people today. But without further ado, though, let's hear what Dr. Douglas has to say. Thank you so very much for being with us, Joe. Why don't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about these mind control techniques and of course, what you've discovered, because I know you've been evaluating this for a long time since your contact with Major General Senya, who was one of the highest-ranking people ever to defect to the United States.
Yes, well, actually, I guess he's a good place to start with, because he was a very key source and the only person that really knew about these types of things in the West. He defected in 1968, and before that time, he had some of the highest-ranking positions in Czechoslovakia. He was a member of the Central Committee, a member of the National Assembly, like our Senate, and of the Presidium, which gave instructions to the National Assembly. But he was also First Secretary of the party at the Ministry of Defense, and chief of staff to the Minister of Defense, and he ran the Secretariat of the Defense Council for several years. And those three positions put him in touch with about every single issue of importance or operation that was taking place in running the Defense Council in particular, because the Defense Council in the communist system is the highest-ranking decision-making body in areas of intelligence and counterintelligence, defense, national security, and as it turns out, also foreign policy and the economy as well. And it ranked above the Politburo. So you can well appreciate the importance of this individual. On top of that, he had a near photographic memory, nearly total recall. He could remember meetings that had taken place 30 years ago, and he would tell me who was present and what the points were made, what the meeting was all about, and even, you know, where there were very important people present, such as the head of the Communist Party, Nikita Khrushchev or Brezhnev or Suslov or any of those people. He'd actually quote them as they were talking, 10, 15, 20 years ago. An amazing memory.
Well, of course, it was wonderful, because you had the opportunity to brief him and spend a great deal of time talking to him, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I got very close to him, and I guess it was really because I found what he had to say just fascinating, and most of the people didn't like what he had to say, and so he had many enemies. They didn't like what he had to say because it was contrary to policy, and it was contrary to institutional positions, particularly those within the State Department, the Defense Department, and the CIA.
And because the last thing they wanted the American people to know was what Major General Senya said about all the American prisoners who were taken to Moscow. We'll be right back. Will you go ahead and pick the story up there, Joe, please?
Be glad to, Dr. Stan. This work really evolved out of a number of discussions I had had with General Sena, and we got into looking at narcotics in the 1980s. That was very interesting. My kids were becoming teenagers, and I just happened to decide that, hey, I'd better learn something about drugs because it was getting a lot of attention. This was in the late 70s and early 80s. And the more I read about the problem, the more it struck me that we were not being given the whole truth or even a partial truth about what was causing the problem that we had. In particular, when you looked at the papers that were coming out of Congress, it was unbelievable to me that anybody would think that the Cuban officials would be involved without, for example, the Soviet Union being involved, or that Nicaragua would be involved, or Bulgaria involved, be involved, but without any say-so by the Soviet Union.
You're speaking now.
No sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and you're specifically speaking of their relationship as far as the drugs are concerned. In other words, that all these countries were involved. Certainly the Soviets would be involved with the drugs, right?
Right. Okay. But there was no mention of the Soviet Union. There was no mention of China, and that struck me odd, too. So I decided to see what Jan Sena knew about it, and I called him up, and I said, Jan, let's have lunch tomorrow. And so he met me, and we had our little place where we often like to discuss things over lunch in McLean. And about midway through lunch, I said, Jan, have you ever heard anything about Soviet involvement in international narcotics trafficking? And he stopped chewing, and he looked up, and he said, certainly. And he proceeded to lecture about the whole rest of lunch, a good 45 minutes, on who, when, where, what, how the Soviets got involved, how Czechoslovakia got involved, you know, what their policies were, what the strategy was. It was just a plethora, nonstop information. It was like a gold mine. It took me about 5 years to really debrief him reasonably seriously. And what came out was just amazing in terms of how a strategic intelligence really evolves in the Soviet Union. And so that was the first time I really got into talking about things of that nature with Jan, and one thing just led to another. And after that, then I started, it seemed all of a sudden that he might know something about the prisoners of war, which we talked about before. And I asked him if he knew about anything about prisoners of war, and he said, of course.
Well, that thought will be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon is Dr. Joseph Douglas. And Dr. Douglas has worked for many years in intelligence here in the United States. And since his retirement, he's written a number of books, one of them, Red Cocaine, going into the communist involvement in the drugs that were flowing into America. He recognizes the part that the CIA played in that as well. But then, of course, the CIA and the communists have always worked many times in concert, although they're supposedly deadly enemies. Sometimes there's a great deal of difference between reality and perception. But then he wrote a book on Sidney Betrayal, the men we left behind in Vietnam and Laos, and many of those men are still alive in all probability and have been prisoners ever since the 1974-1975 period. And everything's been done to conceal this from the American people. Dr. Douglas is writing a new book now based upon his conversations with Major General Sena, who was, of course, a very high official in the Czechoslovakian government who defected to the United States, and told Dr. Douglas about the mind control techniques that were being developed in Russia, and many of those techniques are actually being used on the American people today, but without our knowledge, we don't understand how effective mind control can be. But Dr. Douglas, you pick up the story there.
I'll be glad to, Dr. Stan. Sena was certainly a very unusual individual. This was not just hearsay that he had or secondhand information. In the case of like the narcotics trafficking, he was there at all the initial meetings that were run by Nikita Khrushchev that put them in the business. He was the lead Czechoslovak officer in orchestrating the development of Czechoslovakia's first global narcotics trafficking plan, which was coordinated with the Soviet plan. In the case of prisoners of war, he was there in Czechoslovakia with the entire cleansing operation that was going on in Korea when the lead Soviet general came over to make sure that all the signs of experimentation on American POWs were appropriately covered up as they withdrew in 1953. He was part of the operations, and he knew them all cold, the code word names, who was involved, the strategy, all that type of thing. But he never really volunteered much information. You had to ask him the questions, because he had been so, I think, dismayed by the United States that he didn't want to volunteer areas. He did once, and nothing happened. He told his handler that he had that, in his opinion, the most important information he brought with him was on the long-range strategic plan for the next 10 to 15 years and beyond. Now, this was the basic strategic plan that underlay their entire strategy for war against the rest of the world. He said that while it was very important, that he wouldn't, because it was of its importance, that he would not discuss it until the decision to grant him political immunity had been made. And once that decision had been made, nobody ever asked him a question about it. I was probably the first person that really started talking to him about that. Well, I had never thought of this issue of mind control other than in the sense that we're all pretty well aware of when we stop to really think about it, which is the tremendous operations of propaganda that have been orchestrated through the last century and brought to a fine pitch, which now is responsible for most of the brainwashing, which includes control of the schools, the media, influence, people of influence in the decision-making, very, very well developed during the last century. Well, one day I was talking with a friend of mine, and we got talking about some of the people in the news business, and he said, you know, I've always wondered, because, you know, there's this big news mogul, if you will, one of the top people in the news business in terms of managing, running the thing. He said he used to be a pretty conservative guy, but he went over to Russia visiting them for a week or two, and when he came back, he was a near pacifist then. He couldn't understand it, and he looked at me and said, you know, have they been involved in mind control by any chance? And I stopped and thought about it, and all of a sudden, all the bells and whistles went off in my mind, because we've been talking about that, but without focusing on it, when we were talking about the prisoners of war and what happened to American prisoners of war. And what happened to them is they ended up being very valued by the Soviet Union for guinea pigs used to test chemical weapons, the effects of nuclear radiation on the soldiers, used to test the limits of their ability to withstand pain, and then they were also used to test new drugs under development. And we talked a little about those, but I never really sort of focused in on what they were developing. I was really thinking of the POWs and what were happening to them.
Well, Chris, I think it's so important the American people understand that our government knew that the Soviets were actually using our POWs as guinea pigs for horrible, terrible experiments. And yet, of course, they couldn't let the American people know, because all this time we were helping the Soviets in every way we could. On one side, they were supposedly the enemy, and yet there was always a technique by which we were funding them. We have funded the communism since its inception, the best enemy money could buy. But go right ahead, Dr.
Yes, so this, of course, is one of the, General Sane himself is an excellent example of that. Of course, another one of the best examples is Anthony Sutton's book on the best enemy money can buy. But what we have done, our intelligence community has done, has been to lean over backwards, trying to discredit Sane to make sure nobody wants to talk to him, and to not debrief him on anything of strategic importance. When I first got working with him, and after a week or so, it struck me, you know, this guy has a strategic mind. He knows, you know, more of what happened than anybody I've ever run into, by far. And yet nobody seems to have heard any about these things about him. And so then I talked to him about what he was debriefed on, and they were nonsense topics. And I went then back, and I pulled out all the intelligence reports on his debriefings, and I read through them, and they were exactly what Sane told me he had been debriefed on. And for a year that he was under a serious debriefing, serious, in quotations marks that is, they never debriefed him on one item of strategic importance. That's a good illustration of the efforts within the United States government to be silent about the crimes of communism and not let any of the information out. Well, when I got interested in this mind control thing, I went back and started talking to Sena in detail about what were the experiments that were being performed on U.S. servicemen, and in particular, what were the drugs that were being developed. And this turned out to be fascinating because they really got underway in a real productive sense in the late 40s, and by the late 60s, they had an array of over 25 families of pharmaceutical quality drugs for use in influencing attitude and changing behaviors covertly without the individual knowing about it. So they were very different from propaganda in terms of mind control. Propaganda really addresses the masses. The school addresses the masses. The media addresses the masses. But these were discrete drugs that were used to be applied covertly, generally against individuals, individuals' importance, or individuals with access to things of importance. And they had fantastic developments that were able to come about in the 1950s and the 1960s. This all started, really, as an outgrowth of World War II. And during World War II, the United States, the British, the Germans, the Russians were all heavily involved in trying to figure out how to control minds. The Russians were more interested in how do you get confessions out of people. The United States was more interested in intelligence aspects. How do we protect our intelligence agents from releasing information if they get captured, or vice versa? How do we tap into spies that we catch? Why this is so interesting is World War II, as you recall, was just in the late 1940s, and that was precisely the time when we started becoming aware of the potential of drugs, psychoactive drugs. That's when neuropharmacology was born, and particularly was really born in 1949 and 1951 with the discovery of the effects of chlorpromazine and lithium on the mind and on treating schizophrenia. And then you had, at that same time, you had LSD, which had been produced in the late 50s at Sandoz. In about 1951, they published the actual formula for LSD. And so that became a very key drug used in trying to see how we use that for mind control. And the United States pharmaceutical companies got very heavily involved, as did the European ones. And by the 1957, you started having drugs appearing such as Librium. And then you had all the benzodiazepines started coming out of that work in 1957-58, because it became very directed work. And it was so pronounced in what it was developing that in 1961, there was actually a control of the mind symposium that was held by the Medical School of San Francisco, or the University of California Medical School at San Francisco, where they had so many people attended that they had to spread the attendees not only in San Francisco but over to the Berkeley campus and have close audio so that people could really understand what was happening. It was an amazing conference.
And I think that most Americans do not understand there's a conscious, organized, orchestrated effort to learn how to control the minds of individuals and of the masses as well. And certainly so many of the drugs that are being given widely, so many of the things we come in contact with, sometimes even simply in our diet, can have a psychotropic effect. But the average American has no idea these things are going on. The average American has no idea, really, that there is an organized effort to control our population. And yet, of course, you talk to most people today about what's going on, and most of them would rather talk about sports or Britney Spears rather than the real issues that affect the world and them today. Why don't you go ahead, Dr. Douglas?
Glad to, Dr. Stan. One of the things that I think that your audience might be very interested about this point in time is some actual examples. I mean, what were they really doing with these drugs? And let me just run through a few examples. One was an interesting drug that was used on, this is the last of the Stalin trials to weed out the leadership. And one of these drugs, which was used to get confessions, was used on a top minister in Czechoslovakia called Smirkovsky. And later on, Sena was one of the people that helped liberate him and get him back into real life. And he recalled a conversation with Smirkovsky, because Smirkovsky was afraid to talk to anybody because he was told that he was sent for trial back in the early 50s, and when he was finally released back in the late 50s, he was told that he better not talk about anything like this with anybody, or he'd go back and serve the rest of his term. So
now,
he didn't want to talk about anything with anybody.
Was this a Soviet prisoner here in the United States?
No, this was a top Czech official.
I see, okay.
And he was arrested for sabotage and for destroying the agriculture in Czechoslovakia. And, of course, you know, he didn't. He was just a convenient dupe when they were doing that type of thing back there. And he described what happened to Sena when Sena was rehabilitating him. He said, well, you know, I was arrested, and they put me in a jail, and they brought me in and gave me a piece of paper to read, which I read. It didn't make too much sense to me, but because I'd just been given a shot of drugs by the Czech Secret Service. But I read it, and they corrected me, and I read it again. And then they brought it in also after lunch, and I'd been given more drugs. And I read it again, and I was getting, so I actually believed it. And we did it again the next morning, and then he was put on tape after giving his whole confession on trial and not understanding what he was saying, but appearing for all evident purposes for the onlookers, like, yes, he was confessing to all the drugs, okay, or to all the
crimes
he accused of doing. And he told Sandy that, you know, I really believe these things, and I didn't remember what was happening until later that night as I was about ready to fall asleep. And this is the way some of these drugs, the confession drugs, actually worked. That was a first generation drug which eventually became followed by what were called friendship drugs. And the friendship drugs were ones that were first tested on American POWs during the Korean War. Now, you recall many of the American prisoners in the Korean War were put on television where they would talk about how bad the United States was and how good everything in North Korea was. That was the result of these drugs. Korean War was very unusual, people don't recognize, because of the way what happened to our POWs. When you looked at the POWs as a whole and their organizations, their prison camps, there was no organization among American POWs, no solidarity, there was low morale, there were no escapes, there was wholesale collaboration with the enemy, and a lot of anti-American propaganda. This was not accidental. This was the result of Chinese brainwashing, but of friendship drugs.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Douglas is simply talking about the American POWs in Korea. Now, people don't remember, there were 8,000 Americans who were never repatriated from Korea. We never tried to get them back. We never, in fact, instance after instance after instance, where there were evidence that they had been taken prisoner, some of them had been taken to Russia, some of them had been tortured to death. But everything was done to conceal this from the American people. Oh, we don't want the American people to know, they wouldn't be able to accept this. But of course, many of these young people who were actually gone off to fight for freedom, abandoned by their country, abandoned by their leaders, abandoned by their politicians, were used as guinea pigs for these drugs that were to be developed to alter the mind of people. Would that be a fair statement, Joe?
Absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, there was, in the early developments, there was a big tie between the mind control drugs and the hallucinogenic drugs, which were experimented upon almost exclusively by the CIA in terms of trying to develop their own brands of mind control drugs. They were heavily involved in the use of marijuana and LSD and all sorts of hallucinogenics, and looking for different drugs that would have an effect on the mind that they could capitalize on. Now, another one of great interest is how they worked in changing attitudes. There were a couple of high-ranking Finnish officials who hated the Russians so much that they're now about to visit the Soviet Union. So individually, at different times, they were both invited over to conference, about a week-long conference in Prague, Czechoslovakia. And as Santa described it, they were fed drugs in their breakfast and lunch without knowing it. And for the next 2 or 3 days, they were then always accompanied by a different Czech intelligence agent who was really there to espouse different particular views about the Soviet Union and basically to espouse a position which was contrary to their positions. Well, after 5 years, after five days, they had adopted, the Finns had adopted those attitudes. And the Soviet Union was no longer an enemy. It was just, another country that was being abused by its neighbors, and hence they had to do their own defensive things to survive. And they weren't bad guys at all. And they went back to Finland with that point of view. And that took about a week to accomplish that with these drugs, which is a very interesting illustration, because the drugs are not usually just given to somebody and you expect a change to take place. Rather, what they are is they're a part of a very sophisticated psychological operation which has been planned down to the last detail. And it was those operations which could accomplish a whole slew of things. One of the more interesting drugs was what they called a loosen-the-tongue drug, which would be administered to an individual, and they would answer questions, and it didn't matter whether there was any security content to the answers or not, because it's like the drug sort of cut the little linkages between in their mind that said, this is a secret, don't talk about it, and what they talked about, they just came right out and talked about everything that people wanted to know. And so it became a very key drug in espionage. And one of the things they would do is they'd identify their list of technical questions they had. The Soviets would, and the Czechs did the same thing. And then the Academy of Scientists would identify scientists in the West who were best able to answer the questions and give design information on different technical questions. Who were the people in Eastern Europe or Czechoslovakia that knew the language and could talk with these people about the questions? And then Czech intelligence would work to get invitations to these various individuals into various conferences that were held in Eastern Europe or in a neutral country of some sort, usually away from the United States. They would then accompany Czech scientists, or in the case of Bulgaria, if they were involved at that time, they would take other scientists that also know the business. Usually the two top countries were Germany and Czechoslovakia. Not the Russians, because the Russians were too feared and concerned to many people. But these scientists would go to the conference, and the intelligence agency would bring about a meeting of the two people and a pleasant discussion, during which time drugs would be fed to the Americans who knew the answers, and unbeknownst to them, then as they proceeded through the dinner, they get involved in discussions and tell the people in Czechoslovakia exactly what they wanted to know. And
in other words,
the interesting side effect, and this is tremendously important, is that afterwards they had no recollection of the conversations during dinner.
In other words, be very, very careful of a Russian bringing you a glass of Coca-Cola, something of that sort, because I'm sure they do this thing on a regular basis with their diplomats, and most of them have no idea what's really happening.
Oh, no. Absolutely.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Dr. Douglas, go right ahead with what you were saying. You were talking really about how the other scientists or diplomats would be invited to these meetings, and of course they would be drugged without their knowledge, and then many times they would give away information that they never would have given away if they'd been in control of their facilities or faculties.
One of the great illustrations of that point is the Soviets learned in advance about the devaluation of the British pound in the mid-60s. And Sina came to know how that happened. It turned out the information was obtained by the head of Bulgaria, Tudor Zhivkov. And Sina was there with some other Czech officials, and they were having lunch with Zhivkov, and they brought up how nice it was to have found out this in advance, what techniques did he use. And he went off on sort of a tangent. He says, well, you know, in the modern age, we really don't always have to spend a lot of time to recruit people. All that's necessary is to invite the gentleman out to dinner, and he'll tell us what we want to know. And of course, they had used these same types of mind controls on the British banker, who was then visiting them, and he told them about in advance about the plan to devalue the British pound that had just been decided upon. Now, this is not something that any banker or any person in official capacity would dare tell anybody about. Yet it came right out naturally in the conversation, thanks to the little pills, as Sina would say.
And I think what's really frightening is the fact that there are these psychotropic medications that will alter people's perception. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. And the important thing about it is that they have no idea what's happening. Only in rare occasions might they detect something in the taste. But a lot of work went into making them tasteless or putting them into places, drinks or food that they wouldn't notice the taste. They can get them subcutaneously through the skin by putting them on clothing or in a napkin that they would be handling. They can be dispersed in the air depending upon who else is around. You have all these types of things that can be done in many different ways, and they're extremely sophisticated, and people don't understand it because of the effort within the United States to maintain silence about this and discredit the one person that really could talk about it and knew what was happening.
But why wouldn't they want the American people to know the truth about these programs?
Well, I think it goes back to this alliance between communism and capitalism that most people don't believe that you've talked about so brilliantly, Dr. Stan, and have written about in a number of your newspapers.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Joe Douglas, and of course he has written two books, or at least he's written two books, and now a third one. We actually carry The Betrayed. I always keep thinking we should carry The Red Cocaine. It's excellent. I've read it, and I'll try to be more efficient with these. Written a new book on mind control. Do you have a website or anything, any site or information you'd like to get out to our listeners?
No, there's a paper on this topic that I did write. There's two papers, actually, just to see what the reaction would be. One of them is on the internet. They're both on the internet. One was published in the Medical Sentinel, and it's carried there under influencing, changing minds and influencing behavior. And the other is Welcome to the Brave New World, which is an article, a very similar article, which is carried on the website financialsense.com. And these have been very interesting because they open up this whole field with a number of examples and background on it, yet the silence has been the only real response, just a sort of a deafening silence, because nobody wants to pick it up. It's a horrendously frightening topic, and especially when you look at all of the things they were accomplishing by the late 1960s and the way it was influencing national events, international events, and also when you look at their research objectives and the way they were going, which meant that this was going to really expand over the years and be widely employed.
One of the things that really disturbs me is that John McCain, of course, was controlled by the communists for several years when he was a prisoner there. What do you think they did to him? What did they do to his mind? We do know that after the war, why there were pictures of him hugging the communists who were torturing other prisoners. I mean, in a friendly embrace. He doesn't seem to have any animosity at all to the people who treated him and tortured him and his fellow prisoners. And you wonder really about him as the president, but then of course we have Mr. Obama, who has a long history of affiliation with communism. So I'm not quite sure which one we should be the most frightened of, but go right ahead. Certainly we do know that they've used these experiments to control the minds of our prisoners, and sometimes even to create Manchurian candidates.
Absolutely, and you know, this is not something that was a low-level intelligence operation. This was one of the most important intelligence operations, and became one of the most important ones by the late 50s. Khrushchev once talked about this with one of the top Soviet marshals, Marshal Malinovsky, and basically said to him, "Trouble with you, General, you're too ambitious to use your tanks. You won't use them today, and for me, tomorrow is sufficient." And then he went on to say that basically, you know, what our first two echelons in the war against the West are our deception and drugs. And not until those have accomplished their mission will we employ our tanks. And those were our first two strategic echelons, he said. And Yepyshev, who ran the main political information, political administration, top watchdog over the whole military establishment, and he was previously deputy head of the KGB. His view of them was, as he quoted, as he told Sena, and Sena was quoting him, he says, "Drugs are much faster than waiting for ideology and propaganda."
And of course, then this would carry on with the ideas of Sun Tzu. The whole idea was to control the enemy's reality, his mind. To fight and conquer in all of your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence is to defeat the enemy without fighting him. And of course, that is exactly what the Russians would like to do today. Continuing with Sun Tzu's rhetoric, the Chinese political philosopher lived 1,000 years or so ago, and yet, of course, he foresaw the importance of controlling the mind. But now they can do it ever so much more efficiently with drugs. So go right ahead.
Absolutely. And in the a meeting that Sena attended, was attended by all the top communists, about 3 or 4 days before he defected, and one of the attendees, of course, was Leonid Brezhnev. And Brezhnev was talking about drugs and lecturing the people around him. And he said, "If we had only spent 10% of what we spent on the missiles on these drugs, we would now be pretty close to controlling all of NATO." And this was in 1968, in January that he said that. Excuse me, February. And the whole subject became so important and so such a high level interest in it that in 1968 time frame, when Andropov was really maneuvering to take over the head of the KGB, one of the main issues that arose was in who was going to have access to drugs, and he pressured and put forth in his program, with the assistance of the top ideologist, Suslov, that all of the drugs program and the decision to use them would be moved under the exclusive control of the KGB, and other people could not even bring up the subject of the Defense Council meeting without first discussing it with the KGB. Now that was tremendously important, because before that time, any time drugs were going to be used, they had to have the approval of the various ministries or secretaries in charge. So there was fairly widespread knowledge among the top echelons about what was happening. But that all changed under Andropov, because he recognized how powerful these things were and how important they would be for the future.
And I think it's so interesting, in Russia, of course, you had Andropov, he came from the KGB, then you had Gorbachev, he came from the KGB, now we have Putin, of course, he came from the FSB, which was really the KGB with a different name. And, of course, the people in the secret police have, you know, dominated Russia for the last 30 or 40 years. But it's not surprising. Here in the United States, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency became the president of the United States. In fact, he controlled the Sidney Hart administration for a period of 12 years, 4 years, probably 8 years as vice president, when Ronald Reagan, after an attempted assassination by, just happened to be by the son of a close friend of Neil Bush's, tried to kill Reagan, and so really took the background, and George Bush controlled us. He then became the president of the United States, but he was the head of the American counterpart. He was American, the head of the CIA, and today his son is the president of the United States. So you see this power elite working through the secret intelligence organizations, you know, working behind the scenes in both Russia and the United States.
And one of the ways that you can manipulate the political process with through the use of the drugs, I'll give you a very good example, Dr. Stan, is drugs that were called self-destruct drugs. They were administered to an individual, and here you didn't require much follow-up on it because they did things to the individual which mainly caused him to be his own worst enemy, to self-destruct. For example, there was something that was similar to the loosen-the-tongue drug, but a little bit different, and it caused a person to speak what was on his mind without the slightest concern about any of the political ramifications of what he was saying. You know, whatever was on his mind, he could talk about it. And you can understand how quickly that could cause a politician that they didn't want in office to self-destruct. Another drug that they had that could be used to destroy leaders was drugs that prevented rational thinking, so the person just couldn't continue to lead. Another one was a drug that would cause mental confusion. Again, one that would inhibit the leadership ability of various individuals and be enough to ruin somebody's career. And we all know how rough it is when somebody just makes an offhand comment that they really shouldn't have made. It's in the newspapers, you know, all over the country within, you know, a few hours, particularly if it's somebody that they don't want to be winning. And so the whole, for another good example, is an aggressive drug. It would cause somebody to become very aggressive, overbearing, and, of course, you lose a lot of friends that way. They used one of these on one of their Air Force generals who the GRU wanted to be arrested and brought to the Soviet Union because he was one of the few Czech military officers that really stood up for Czechoslovakia, not the Soviet Union. And what they finally did is they called him to Prague where they were going to arrest him. And that would have been very embarrassing because everybody knew what a good military officer he was. And so they called him on a day when the weather was extremely bad, and he was a pilot. And he was going to cancel and not come, but he said, "Oh, the hell with the weather, I'll fly," because somebody had given him the drugs at lunch. And, of course, he started out and flew to Prague, but crashed en route. And it struck me that these same drugs might well have been used on Americans, either the pilots or the maintenance, because they were tested on Americans in Vietnam. And I think one of the things that led to the crash of a lot of these, I think it was the F-111, which was a joint plane that was championed by McNamara. It didn't serve anybody's interests well, but he got one plane. And they had a lot of crashes, and they attributed to the ground avoidance, terrain avoidance radar that wasn't working right. But it turned out that the Czech intelligence people were using these drugs against people on the U.S. air bases, really to see how good of effect they could have just in that way of winning a war by disabling American pilots and planes.
Well, I think it's frightening to think of these things, and of course the effect that they can have on your mind, because if they can control your mind, they can control you. But the average American doesn't even understand the effect of drugs, the effect of, for instance, what's the active ingredient in Prozac and Luvox? Why, it's fluoride. And where do they get fluoride? Why, we put it in their drinking water. Isn't that interesting? That, along with lead and arsenic and something called hydrolysic acid, that is used in 90% of the communities that have fluoridated drinking water. And, of course, these have psychotropic effects. Lead and fluoride and arsenic are all put into the drinking water, and people say, oh, they're just small amounts. Well, they're cumulative, ladies and gentlemen. They're cumulative, and the fact that nobody ever talks about that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Go right ahead, Dr. Douglas.
Another wonderful example of that, Dr. Stan, is, of course, the effect of drugs on the personality, the drugs that are used for people undergoing long and serious operations. We have many people that recognize that now that after, say, a heart operation, quadruple bypass or something like that, there are actual personality changes that are often observed in a person that will last for 6 months to a year. That was one of the things that struck me at the time of that Al Haig went off in a way that after the attempted assassination of Reagan, which struck me as something that was totally uncharacteristic of Haig. And then it struck me, hey, he had an operation, a bypass operation, about 4 or 5 months earlier, as I recalled. And that was probably what ended his term in office. So those things can have a lot of effects that, like you say, people generally don't recognize. There's another example of a delightful example on the use in a political operation. You recall the United Arab Republic that was being formed in the late 50s. Well, the Soviets did not want a unified Arab operation underway.
Oh, was that of course where Nasser, what was that, Nasser in,
yeah,
Syria, Egypt and Syria? Right, go ahead.
Yeah. And so they had, Czechoslovakia of course had a lot of agents in both Egypt and Syria, and so they were the lead country in this. And what they did is they gave drugs to the Egyptian military officers who were primary liaisons with the Syrians. And they gave to the Syrian generals, they gave drugs that caused them to be very paranoid. And this was not a very good mixture, and between the aggressive Egyptians and the paranoid Syrians, the whole thing blew up. And nobody ever recognized it. Sonny was there at a meeting. It was had an Egyptian and a Syrian and the minister of foreign minister of Czechoslovakia, I believe it was, and he was just sort of playing a cat and mouse game, trying to query them on what happened and why did they break up the UAR effort, just trying to see what they knew or what would come out, I suspect. But at any rate, the conversation, as Santa described it, was hilarious, because neither of them really knew, and finally the Syrian person blurted out all I remember is we weren't allowed to get those. We were not about to let the Egyptians, who wanted to take control over everybody in the Middle East, have their way. And it was a good example of the drugs in operation.
And of course, what a frightening thing it is, of course, when you can actually drug people without their knowledge, without their even realizing, of course, that their mind is being altered. And for so many of our young men who were left abandoned in Korea and abandoned in Vietnam have been used as guinea pigs. And where is the outcry from our leaders? Why, they've done everything to suppress that information, including John McCain, who actually supervised the hearings. He and John Kerry supervised the hearings, the Senate hearings back, I think, about 1991 on the men we abandoned, and did everything they could to suppress the truth about the men who were left behind.
Another interesting example was they used the drugs on their allies, too. North Vietnam is a good example. They recruited Pham Van Dong, I believe it was, foreign minister, as their man in Hanoi. with the use of friendship drugs. And then they also used them on the on groups of officers that would come to Czechoslovakia for discussions in military aid and assistance during the Vietnam War. And there was one time, very typical, when they were overseas seeking additional supplies, and this was anticipation of the major offensive, but they wouldn't tell the Czechs what it was for or what they had planned. And after about 2 days of meetings, one of the top Czechs came to Sena and said, you know, can they increase the strength of the pepper they give them in the morning? And Sena went to intelligence and said, hey, put a little more pepper in their eggs, or whatever they were eating. And then the North Vietnamese started talking, singing like birds, telling them about all their offenses on the operation that was going to be launched in 64.
Well, we know that, of course, John McCain, Senator McCain, has an uncontrollable temper, and of course, many of the people who've been in the Senate with him talk about how he flies to a rage, and you can't help but wonder, did they do something to his mind when he was their prisoner, when they were using him, using these drugs on him? Did they use them? We will probably never know. We'll be right back with Dr. Douglas to finish up. Well, Joey, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. But I mean, this situation with John McCain, who has been under their control for so many years when he was a prisoner, what did they do to his mind, and how will that influence what's going on? Certainly, I have an article out of Newsweek magazine, I think it is, or U.S. News and World Report, when a reporter asked John McCain, why do you want to run for president? And his response was, well, Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. And for those who saw the movie of the Manchurian Candidate, of course, Angela Lansbury was the controller of the Manchurian Candidate. Well, it's a strange thing for John McCain to have said.
Yes, and it's even stranger that the actions he took to block any access to the various debriefings of prisoners that came out ended up coming out from North Vietnam. Which he did, and to curtail the distribution of a lot of the material that should have been out in the open.
About the men we abandoned, and he cooperated with the communists to conceal that, but it wasn't just the communists, but the people at the highest echelons of our government who were part of this communist-capitalist alliance.
That's the key thing right there, that communist-capitalist alliance, and I guess the most succinct description of it is the sequence of what you have about 4 newsletters that reviewed that whole thing back last summer, as I recall.
Well, we put that into a little pamphlet, and it is available through Radio Liberty. We think it's one of the best things that's out there. Of course, it certainly takes the material put out by Solzhenitsyn and by Professor Sutton and by others. Larry McDonald, of course, we know what happened to Larry McDonald because he kept pointing out how the United States was funding communism, and you know, his body has never been found, nor the bodies of almost anybody else on that plane. When they found the plane, actually, that the KLA 007 that went down, why, there were no bodies in it. Isn't that interesting? Nobody's heard that, but the plane was actually found, and there were no bodies.
One of the things that isn't betrayed is a discussion of the actual Soviet operation, which was used with about 10% of the POWs. To basically prepare them for defecting back to the United States and making them basically agents in place in the United States. And they worked with some people that were just in Vietnam that had to be reinserted quickly, and others that were in for the long haul. And they did that, and nobody's ever run across any of those, to my knowledge.
Well, we're out of time, Joe. Thank you very much. How soon will the book be out?
I would like to see it get out this year.
Well, I hope you'll send me a copy as soon as you get it. We'll do a whole flock more programs. But we're out of time. God bless. Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Of course, our guest today, Dr. Joe Douglas. If you've not yet read his book, Betrayed, It's the best book we have available on The Men We Left Behind. We also carry the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson. And, of course, there she goes into the CIA and drugs. So Monica is no slouch. She's married to William Stevenson, one of the world's great writers. And, of course, Monica's pretty good as well. But she was actually a producer for 60 Minutes until she tried to get the truth about The Men We Abandoned. And then, of course, that hit all sorts of problems. The first book was actually recalled by the publisher, and when she got the copyright back and moved up to Canada, why, of course, they accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of The Men We Left Behind. Now, we do offer second-hand copies. We do have them available. We also have my interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson, author of that book on the men we abandoned in Vietnam. It's called The Men We Left Behind. We have One Man Came Back, and I believe it's The Men We Left Behind. Anyway, there are two four-tape sets on The Men We Abandoned over there, and one man to us did come back, and his name was Bobby Garwin. And the government did everything they could to destroy him. Why? Because he talked about all the men that he'd seen when he was there, and they couldn't allow the American people to realize how many hundreds of perhaps thousands of men we abandoned in Vietnam and Laos that were probably still there. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that there's a very close working relationship between the people who control America and the people who control the communist countries, and the wars back and forth are all no-win wars. It was a no-win war in Vietnam. It was a no-win war in Korea. Of course, it's a no-win war in Iraq and in Afghanistan today. If you'd like to get the four-tape sets, Monica Jensen Stevenson, The Men We Left Behind, and her book is called Kiss the Boys Goodbye, but the four-tape set is called The Men We Left Behind, and then One Man Came Back, and you'll hear two of my interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson, where she will tell you much of what I have just told you, a very courageous woman. And then we carry Dr. Joe Douglas's book, Betrayed, which I think is probably the best single book we have on the subject of the men we abandoned at the time of the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, and in Vietnam. Now, if you want this documentation, of course, we carry the report of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the POWs. We have that inexpensive book, a report that came out totally suppressed by the media. We couldn't let the American people or the military even realize how we betrayed our soldiers, especially the 20,000 to 25,000 American soldiers who were abandoned after World War II, and all of them died in Siberia. And most Americans have never heard of that. But we have that Senate Foreign Relations Committee report. And then, of course, we have my little pamphlet, The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. I recommend it to you. We talk about this in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And then, of course, we carry the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. And we have a DVD by the same title, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. I mean, have you ever wondered how it was that a country the size of the United States, the most powerful nation in the world, could fight almost a 10-year war with a little country the size of the state of Mississippi, and America could lose the war in Vietnam? Well, of course, the truth of the matter is, we never went there to win. And we have a four-tape set on Vietnam where we tell you what Vietnam was really all about. It was never what we were told. It was simply a great diversion. As our boys went overseas to fight for freedom, why we were to lose our freedom at home, the Supreme Court would take God and prayer out of our schools, the Supreme Court would find a woman had a right to an abortion, the Supreme Court would allow the centralization of power in Washington, D.C., the change in our immigration laws, the centralization of power in Washington, D.C., in conflict with the entire concept of our Constitution, the Great Society. It was all to bring socialism to America, and of course with every new law would come the progressive loss of freedom. Well, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. Go there and look at the other videos section. The other videos section, especially Building 7, and then pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.